Hey, listeners, does medical freedom matter to you? It sure does matter to us, and we believe that medical freedom is tied very closely with religious freedom and just the personal freedoms that we enjoy and that are our God-given rights. If this is a cause that matters to you and you would like to link arms with the medical community that is standing for patient rights and privacy, the right to treat, informed consent, and so much more that matters to you as the patient to provide you with better care and better providers, I do welcome you to visit ncphysiciansforfreedom.com to understand better what North Carolina Physicians for Freedom stands for and to hopefully donate to our cause. We are a 501c3 and your donations are tax deductible. Thank you so much for linking arms and we really appreciate you. Hey, and welcome to Healthy Discourse. It's Emily here and I'm very excited to welcome to the show today my new friends, Chrissy and Lee Hicks. Hey, Chrissy and Lee.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. I'm really grateful for you guys to take some time out of your very busy lives and to share some time with our audience because your story is so important. Has been over the last, has it been like a year? Is that correct?
Almost a year.
Okay. And beyond, because it's still going on and it's never going to be finished because that's how hard work works in this world.
That's true.
That's right. So for our audience, I'm just going to throw it back almost a year ago. And probably you saw in the news about this lovely young lady who is adopted from Ukraine with these wonderful parents and this huge family who was denied a kidney transplant from Duke right here in North Carolina. And you guys were on the national news. I think I heard it on all of my favorite podcasts and so forth. And they are joining us today to tell a little bit more about their story that right now, Yulia, their daughter, is doing really well. And but the work continues as they are on a mission to make sure that their story doesn't repeat itself time and time again with other families struggling with the same thing and being denied organ transplants based upon vaccine status. Yes, specifically for COVID, but I think we would all love to see that for any medical intervention. And so, Chrissy and Lee, again, thank you for joining us and would love for you to just tell a little bit. I know we could talk for like 3 hours about the history and story of your family and so forth, but can you give us the short version of your family, how Yulia came to be in your family and her health struggles and kind of the background that led up to this?
Yes, sure, of course. So we had 7 kids at the time and I didn't want to buy Christmas presents. So I decided we were going to host an orphan from the Ukraine. And that's when we brought our oldest daughter into the family, Anastasia. And at the same time that we adopted Anastasia, Yulia and her brother, Ivan, also were adopted by a family in Raleigh. And that didn't work out. And so Ivan was sent back to the Ukraine and Yulia was sent on to another family in Arizona. And this was already while she was in end-stage kidney failure. That family fell in love with Yulia and wanted to adopt her, but because Ivan was not 18, they had to adopt him as well. And somehow they got him back from the Ukraine. And all this time, we did not know what was going on. We were not in touch with Yulia and Ivan. We knew Yulia had been diagnosed with a kidney problem because our oldest daughter, Anastasia, wanted to test to see if she could be her kidney donor back then. But we never heard any more from the original family. So they got Ivan back from the Ukraine and he had been living on his own for over a year in the Ukraine. You can use your imagination to just imagine how he was and that family couldn't handle it. And so they put him back on a plane, both of them on a plane to Raleigh. And that family said, no, we're not picking them up. Called by the adoption agency on a Friday night about 7 p.m. and asked if we could pick them up from the airport at 10 that evening and keep them for the weekend. So because we knew who they were and Anastasia, you know, spoke, because we were told that Ivan only spoke Russian still. So we said, yeah, we'd be willing to pick them up and keep them for the weekend. And as God's plans are different than ours, he had a different plan for our family. And we knew within a couple of days that his plan was for us to adopt them as well. And he worked miracles. And within 90 days, their adoption was finalized.
Which oh, is wow. That is so fast.
Yeah.
Yes, because we knew that so during that time frame, we took Yulia back to Duke because we knew that she, you know, we knew of her kidney issues and we knew we didn't want to break in her care. So we took her back up to Duke and they told us that, I mean, there were some hoops there too, we won't go into, but they would not start her dialysis unless she had a stable home environment, which I agree with. She couldn't be in foster care and be doing dialysis.
Right.
That was part of the reason why the people who heard about it, I don't know whoever it was that heard about it whoever made the decision that the adoption was final, they moved it along more quickly because they knew that her care was contingent on this adoption going through. So, yeah. Wow. So her adoption was finalized in April and she got her port placed in July and she started peritoneal dialysis the beginning of August of 2021. Yeah.
2021. Okay. So about 2 years ago.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Okay. And so you always knew that she was going to need a transplant because her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because her condition's genetic. And
it's called senior Lucan syndrome. Yeah. So it affects her eyes and her kidneys.
Gotcha. So, and then when you first were going to Duke, they did not, am I correct? They did not seem to have major issues with the fact that Yulia had not been vaccinated for COVID. Is that right? It kind of evolved or was that always their position?
Well, when we first went there, it was not approved for children yet. So, when we get in 21, we got them, right?
21, okay. Yeah.
So we got them in January of 21. So right. It was not approved yet kids.
But they were already, somewhat pressuring us to go ahead and get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. But we were just kind of like, no, we have some concerns with this. So they weren't too pushy about it at that point.
Uh-huh.
The very first day she was approved, we actually ironically had an appointment that day. And she said, it was just approved today. Let's give her the shot. And I said, let's not.
Oh, so wow. The day it was approved.
Yes. They're like, it was just been approved. So we're going to give her the COVID vaccination. Right. And I said, no, we're not. And so I would say that they knew from the very beginning that we had concerns with it.
Right.
They kept bringing it up to us again and again, like at DaVita even too, like the nurses there, the doctors, she really needs to get this. We would explain to them our hesitation and they would just, of course, shut down everything we said. And keep pressuring us. And they kept telling us, you're not going to get a transplant without a vaccination. And I said, well, we'll just see what happens because I just felt like, we'll see how time marches on. We'll see what it looks like when we get closer to the time that she needs a transplant. And then when we went in for our final evaluation for transplant, you can tell this part of the story about Dr.
Yeah. So Dr. Chang came in. He's an infectious disease doc, and basically told us that there were patients that did receive a kidney or a transplant without the vaccine, and so that gave us hope. It's like, oh, okay. So before that, there was the ultimatum: you either get the vaccine or you're not going to get the kidney. And then, but he came in and told us that, and I was like, oh, okay. So I dropped him back. I said, I just understand what you just said. You said that there were patients that did receive a transplant without the vaccine. He said, yes. He said, I wish I could make it mandatory, but I can't.
Mm.
So we're like, oh, okay. So we're hopeful. And then Dr. Chambers came in after him.
Well, yeah. And she kind of pushed back, but then we got emails. That's what started happening is we were getting emails from the transplant coordinator. It wasn't even just the COVID vaccine. There was a whole list of vaccines. And I was like, this is not happening. But they really just like laser focused in on that COVID vaccination. And that's when I said, they wanted me to go up for another appointment so they could tell me no. And I said, I'm not wasting 3 hours of my time for me to drive up to Duke for you to tell me the same thing that you're already telling me. So let's just do a phone call. And that was on the news in December. Like Tucker Carlson had played it on his.
Right.
Little clip where she said it is not mandated, but without it, you cannot get it. So it's just semantics they were playing with us.
Yeah. And the other thing too, we were asking, cause I asked the infectious and even Dr. Chambers this too, is that, cause they were online when we were talking and I asked him, I said, so aren't you going to you know, with the medication, reduce her immune system down to any zero, basically, because you don't want the body to attack the organ. And they said yes. And I said, well, what's the point of the vaccine then?
If you're just going to
reduce. And they couldn't and give they, us any answers.
Yeah, it'll boost her immune system. And I said, well, you just told me you're going to reduce her immune system. So how's that going to make this better?
And one very important note here is that you had documentation that Yulia had already had the COVID virus and had recovered and had antibodies, correct?
That's correct.
And they would, we said, okay, we'll play by your game then. If we're going to play by science, then I want you to test her, titer her, like tell me what her levels are of antibodies right now against COVID. And they said no. So I'm like, then you're not even playing by the same rules. Like this is literally just authoritarian. I'm not following what you want me to do. So you're going to deny my child a life-saving treatment.
Would you say that at Duke, because within our Physicians for Freedom Network, with our, you know, the doctors that are, what I say, on the inside of big medicine, it seems like it really is individual based upon provider, the transplant doctor, and the department chairs. And it sounds like perhaps at the time they did not have a clear message and maybe we're all kind of saying something different and then just double down on that. Was that kind of your perception?
I think maybe because we got a call like soon after being on Tucker, I think.
Yeah, it was a couple
somebody
weeks.
Sent us a message saying, I don't know why you didn't get yours. It was a man named Chad Carswell. He's been in the news. I can say his name. He said he wasn't going to get his vaccination either. And in the end, he got his transplant at Duke, kidney as well, from his mom, who also was not vaccinated. And so he told me, like, the policy's changed. I can get you a vaccine. You know, I can get you a transplant. Yeah. I'm like, you're not a doctor. You're not a decision maker. So I don't know if it's different for pediatric than it is for adult, because I do know that they have done multiple transplants without the vaccination at Duke. So
one interesting note is we have a friend locally that our network also helps who she was denied at Wake Forest and was given her organ at Duke. So I don't know. I mean,
That was the exact same thing Chad experienced.
Yep.
Yes.
And so apparently a lot of Duke rejects go to East Carolina. Like there's a lot of people that they just won't see at Duke. So they are a little bit more.
Now, question is, and I don't want to go forward and backward, but is that still the policy at Duke as far as you know?
So if you call Duke today and ask them if the vaccination is mandated, they will tell you no. But then once you get through the process, they will deny you, just like us. Like, so it's not mandated, but if you don't do it, they can reject you off of bullet point number 5 that says you're not following recommendations of the doctor.
Because the CDC recommends it.
Yeah.
Okay. So. All right. So then you guys realized you weren't going to get the help that you needed at Duke and had kind of gone through on this, you know, this hamster wheel a few times, and then decided, and I feel like I know that our network had several ideas that we were able to share with you guys. And I know you fortunately had kind of an influx of, it seems like, other suggestions, ideas, resources that of other places that Yulia could go.
We heard from Miami Institute of Miami Transplant Institute, I think it's called, done a lot of them. Yep. We actually talked to them. We got approved by them. Like there was, that probably was where we would have ended up. And then there was Advent Health in Orlando. Someone from up here in North Carolina reached out to us. That's also in Advent and got us connected with them. They were kind of slow. So that was taking a long time. And then I got a message from, so apparently hospitals can't reach out to you. You have to reach out to hospitals, but through a third person, they said, you know, call East Carolina. So we talked to East Carolina and they were amazing. They're like, I don't know why you were denied. I looked at her records. We could approve her today and blist her today.
Mm, wow.
Because she had everything. They said all of the notes on her were that she was a model patient. She missed one dialysis in 18 months because we got locked out of our house when we had gone on a trip and our realtor locked us out of the house. So we couldn't get her set up for dialysis that night, but that is the only dialysis she ever missed in 18 months. She never missed her medication. She was a model patient. She did everything they told her to do.
And every time we went to DaVita or even Duke, they said that how well she was doing as a patient, and she was right on target with everything. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it has to be, I mean, we don't know why we were targeted, why they wouldn't give it to her, but it is what it is. So anyway, so East Carolina was super fast. I think we went down there for an evaluation. And then actually our donor saw us in social media. I'm not sure which one he saw. So he tested and he was a match. And then actually the National Kidney Registry tried to take the kidney from us. There was some mix up in the timing and the communication. And so East Carolina fought for us. They said, call the donor and find out what the donor wants to do. And so NKR did. And he said, nope, I want my kidney to go to Yulia. That's why I'm doing this. I'm only involved in this whole situation because of her. And so we got a call Friday that she was going to be doing her pre-op on Monday and went to surgery on Thursday the next week.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's moving right along. Okay. Yeah. So, and then the transplant was incredibly successful.
Incredibly.
And yes. when did the transplant finally happen?
May 25th was her surgery date. And we were home by May 28th, I think. Yep. So it was super fast.
Yeah. That was this year, 2023.
That's 2023.
Correct. Yep. Okay. So how long was she, this was like almost a year.
So November. Yeah. So we were denied end of October initially.
It was the end of October.
So it delayed her 6 months about so if we would have probably had surgery at Duke in November if this hadn't happened. Yeah. And so it delayed us 6 months, but you know,
which fortunately she, you know, was able to hold off that long, but that could have gone differently. Right. I mean,
because now we're starting to do more or multiple.
We had to increase treatment. So she was doing 9 hours at night, but her numbers kept climbing. And so we had to start doing another cycle around dinner time. So we'd have to hook her up for a cycle at dinner time and then take her off. And then hook her back up again at 9 at night.
Yeah, because I'd look at it from the delay, it really put her at more risk.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And no doubt.
The poor girl had been through so much already. Yeah. Not enough to have been adopted from the Ukraine, but then passed around. We were her third family. And then these people who are supposed to be helping her are telling her that if she doesn't take an experimental drug, she's not getting the treatment she needs. You know, she's been through a lot.
Absolutely. Okay. And then, so let's talk about kind of since then. And so there is in the North Carolina House, there was a legislator that introduced legislation in the House called Yulia's Law, House Bill 586 in North Carolina. And let's see, it was introduced when May 2nd, is that right?
I believe so. Okay. Yeah. I think it did pass before she had surgery.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, yeah, it was Celeste Carnes. I don't know her I know she's from Eastern North Carolina, contacted us and said, you know, I really want to push this bill forward. Will you look over it? And we were amazed because we had been contacted through all this by many senators and representatives who said they were going to do something. Then, of course, nothing happened.
We didn't see any results.
So when she sent me that it had passed, I think it passed 92 to 24. It was overwhelmingly passed.
Yes, and it was fast. I'm looking at the bill tracker really quickly right here. It looks like it was filed on April 6th. Passed the first reading on April 10th. It quickly moved out of the Rules Committee, which never happens. It was only in there for a week. And then it was passed in the House on May the 3rd. So that is incredibly fast for anyone that understands legislation. It's that's unheard of in the House itself. And it's a very straightforward bill. It talks about the mandating COVID-19 vaccination for organ transplant candidates and how that constrains autonomy by imposing consequences that are grave consequences for refusal. So it's a very simple, straightforward bill that would eliminate some of this chaos.
And some people think it's not really an issue anymore, but it still is. Like, we're getting contacted by people all over the country still that cannot get their transplants because of COVID vaccination status. And so, you know, we did do a lawsuit against Duke. We ended up voluntarily pulling it back because he didn't file it the right way. And so we will refile eventually, but he's looking at some things and some other lawsuits that are going through right now about COVID so we can put forth the best lawsuit. And while it would be nice to get some monetary compensation for what our family's been through, it would be so amazing. It would be justice to us if we could force North Carolina hospitals to stop doing this to people.
So the whole do no harm, you know, that's what their oath is. And so I don't understand why they're inflicting harm on people who don't necessarily follow a recommendation.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Right. So it would be amazing if they could no longer do that. And if North Carolina could be a safe haven, like a safe place, you know, if it could, people could come from other states to come to North Carolina to get their, you know, their transplant because they don't have to have a vaccination here.
Well, and like we talked about earlier, we are generally talking about one person's personal position who has a lot of authority in any given health system. And whether that be the provider doing the transplant or a department head or whatever, who is unilaterally making the decision, not even based upon the case or the patient, it's him or herself. And that becomes a major problem when too much power is put in the hands of one person who, you know, and it could be that the transplant surgeon is supportive of choice, and the head of the department says, oh no, we're not doing that. And so, you know, one of the four pillars of Physicians for Freedom is respecting professional opinions, excuse me. And so this seems to be another example where a lot of times the individual provider who would love to offer that surgery and transplant are being pigeonholed into not being able to practice medicine the way that they would like, which becomes the corporate practice of medicine, which is illegal.
Right.
So it's a major problem that we're seeing inside of these big systems, and the bigger they are, absolutely the more power that they have. And so it's just one of those things that bills like this, yes, it's very simple, it's very straightforward. I just looked it up again. It passed 91-25 in the House, which is that's a good bit of bipartisan support, even with the supermajority. And so, which is amazing. And so it's now sitting in the Rules Committee in the Senate. And I reached out to one of our really great legislator friends who's very supportive, Senator Joyce Kravick, to see if she has any insight on this, because she is one of the leaders of the Senate Health Committee. And I was surprised that she was unaware of the bill. And I think that just shows that for whatever reason in the Senate, in this Rules Committee, it's been suppressed, and for some reason. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to attach any motive to that because we really don't know. But this is very straightforward and simple, and it's something that I think at this point most people agree on, that with everything that we've been fed over the past 3 years, that allowing individuals, especially parents, to have this choice, especially with the very shoddy science that we have around the COVID vaccine for children and the very, very limited research that was done, the very limited data that we have. And we did a podcast, I don't remember when that was. I can share in the show notes which one that was, when we dug into the very limited data we had on the vaccine in children. I think it's a very well supported argument now that we should have choice. And so I'm grateful that you guys are fighting for that, and we will keep pressing on in the Senate and see what progress we can make, if not in the rest of this session, which is unfortunately winding down at this point, but hopefully in the short session in early 2024, if not before. And I do want to touch on, while we have you guys, what you're seeing with the Oregon Registry and how there is a lack of vaccination status reported. And can you just kind of talk through a little bit the concerns around that and maybe how it's changed?
Yes. So, yes, the bill is very simple, and eventually we would love to expand that to also include them letting recipients know, or the family of the recipients know, the vaccination status of the organs that are being donated as well, because right now they're not reporting. So if you get a call, if you're on the list, you get a call to get a kidney, they will tell you if the kidney
has HIV,
any hep A, B, or C, if they were a drug user, if they were, you know, chronic alcoholic, but they will not tell you the vaccination status of the organ that your loved one would be receiving. And we have a friend that we met through this whole process, whose son did get called off of that. She called me and said, like, what should I do? And I said, ask them the vaccination status, and they would not give it to her. And in her panic, I mean, he was coming off the list. She didn't have a live donor option. She went ahead and gave, you know, they went and gave him the kidney, and it worked fabulously for the first 24 hours. And then it started clotting. And so then they cut him open again, cleaned it out, put it back in again. And then the kidney started clotting again, but they gave him like heparin and he was bleeding out. So the rest of his body was bleeding out. The kidney was clotting. In the end, it was a failed kidney. They took it out after the poor boy went through four surgeries in like 4 days. He's still traumatized deeply by what happened to him. And we don't know for sure because she has called and called and asked and asked, and they will not give her the vaccination status of that organ. And, you know, yes, we're just speculating that it was, but I mean, it's not a hard leap. It's not a hard leap to say that was probably a vaccinated organ,
right?
Because of what happened. And then after she literally, I think that was a month before Yulia went to surgery. And then when she saw how fabulously, you know, Yulia did, it was, you know, even more. So that's what she thinks probably happened. And so, yeah, we're fighting for people like this. She called me actually recently and said, why are you still fighting? Your kid got her kidney. But this is not just about us. And we believe that we were put here for a reason. And if we have the microphone, we need to help other people. I mean, we're both military veterans, and that's what we do. We fight for others. So we just keep fighting.
Well, and I think, yeah, you've opened a lot of eyes to an issue that I don't think the general public really knows about unless you know someone personally, because I mean, I know, and I have another friend that had an organ transplant at the Cleveland Clinic, and they were desperately looking for a donor, a volunteer donor, because for medical reasons, he could not be on the donor registry. And so because that was their requirement, that eliminated a lot of healthy people from being able to be candidates for his transplant as well. And so it goes both ways, right? When the patient and the donor are being required to be vaccinated.
Right. Yep. And Duke was not requiring the donor to do it. It was just the recipient. But I know a lot of donors have removed their names from the list in protest for what they're doing, but which I appreciate the protest, but at the same time, you're eliminating healthy organs for people who need them, you know?
Right.
It's sad. But
right. Well, you guys are doing great work, and I'm just in awe of your family and how you've said yes to so many things and have fought so hard for this little girl that you had just welcomed into your family. And it's incredibly inspiring. And I really love, I'm grateful to connect with you guys and really love what you're doing. And I hope that we can get this legislation passed as a beginning win and hopefully expand on it from there. We, as everyone that is a regular listener of our podcast, know that we, without our medical freedom, our religious freedom, and our just overall freedom, are heavily threatened. And it's something that we all have to be aware of and stay vigilant that we're protecting those rights and opportunities, because as parents and as citizens, we believe that God gave our bodily autonomy to us as individuals to glorify and worship Him. And when those rights are taken away, it matters. Yeah, it matters a lot. And so I'm just very grateful for what you guys are doing, and so happy to hear that many prayers for Yulia continue to be answered and that she is thriving and healthy. And I know that it's just such a blessing to her that she's been welcomed into such a wonderful family. So thank you guys for everything that you're doing, and we will keep fighting together.
Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
God bless.
Bye-bye.